I woke to the taste of blood and dirt. My head throbbed with each heartbeat, a dull pain radiating from a gash above my left temple. The emergency lumens flickered weakly, casting sickly green shadows across the bunker's interior. For several moments, I simply lay there, trying to piece together what had happened. The last thing I remembered was the screaming, not just of men, but the unholy shrieks of those unholy creatures as they poured over the trench walls like a living tide. Private Tarn Volans, serial number 4729V, 88th Cadian Regiment. I repeated this in my mind, anchoring myself to something concrete as consciousness fully returned. The command bunker had partially collapsed. A support beam had given way, bringing down a section of ferrocrete ceiling that had narrowly missed crushing me. The Vox caster unit hummed in the corner, somehow still functional despite everything. Its green indicator light pulsed steadily, though only static hissed from its grill. Occasionally, the white noise would break, giving way to fragments of garbled transmissions, too distorted to make any sense of. I pushed myself up, wincing as my body cataloged its injuries. Nothing seemed broken, though my ribs protested with sharp stabs of pain when I breathed too deeply. The air smelled wrong, like rotten meat and battery acid. The latter scent drew my attention to the walls. The ferrocrete, supposedly able to withstand artillery bombardment, showed signs of corrosion. Deep pockmarks and bubbling divots marred the surface where some kind of acid had eaten into the material. Tyranid bioacid. I'd seen what it did to armor, to vehicles, to men. The thought sent a cold shiver down my spine. Taking stock of my situation became the next priority. My lasgun lay nearby, miraculously intact. The power indicator showed a full charge pack loaded, and I had one spare secured to my webbing. Three foil-wrapped blocks of corpse starch rations remained in my kit, along with a standard-issue combat knife in its sheath at my hip. My flak armor had seen better days, the chest plate bore deep gouges, and the shoulder guard on the right side was missing entirely, but it would still stop shrapnel and maybe a glancing blow. A single cracked grenade hung from my belt, its arming pin secured with the red safety tab still in place. Not much to survive on, but it would have to do. The bunker's main entrance was blocked by rubble, but a secondary access tunnel appeared clear, though it sloped downward into darkness. The emergency lighting didn't extend beyond the main chamber. I checked my chronometer, 18:42 hours, local time. Night would be falling on the surface soon, though down here in the trenches, day and night held little meaning. As I moved deeper into the bunker to search for anything useful, my boot struck something solid. Looking down, I discovered the unmistakable form of Commissar Drave, or what remained of him. His upper torso appeared relatively intact, still clad in the distinctive black greatcoat with red trim, but below the waist, there was little recognizable as human. The acid had done its work thoroughly, leaving behind a half-dissolved mess that merged with the ferrocrete floor. The Commissar's face was frozen in a rictus of determination, one hand still clutching his bolt pistol. I carefully pried the weapon from his stiffened fingers, checking its action and magazine. Three rounds remained, precious little, but the stopping power of bolt ammunition might make the difference if I encountered anything larger than a gaunt. Secured in the Commissar's inner coat pocket, I found a data slate sealed with the regimental cipher. The device still functioned, its screen casting blue light across the dead man's face as I activated it. The slate contained the regiment's final orders, transmitted from Colonel Havelock just before the main assault. The language was terse, unambiguous: hold Kalinar Trench at all costs until extraction. The Adeptus Astartes of the Ultramarines 4th Company would arrive within 72 hours to secure a corridor for evacuation. The timestamp on the orders was 38 hours ago. If the Emperor was merciful, I had just over a day before extraction. If they still came at all, if anyone was monitoring Vox frequencies to know someone remained alive. I gathered what supplies I could find in the bunker. A half-spent medkit yielded some gauze and a single dose of combat stim. The Commissar's flask contained about 2 fingers of amasic, which I left untouched for now. The pain in my head was bad enough without alcohol clouding my judgment. The hours passed slowly. I attempted to restore power to the bunker's main systems, but the generator had been damaged beyond my limited technical ability to repair. The Vox caster continued to emit nothing but static, though I transmitted the standard emergency signal at regular intervals. The chances of anyone receiving it seemed increasingly remote. As the chronometer ticked over to 2100 hours, I rationed myself half a corpse starch block. The bland, gray nutrient paste tasted like nothing and everything at once, the universal flavor of survival. I washed it down with a sip of recycled water from my canteen, careful to preserve what little remained. The temperature dropped as night settled over the battlefield above. The bunker grew colder and I huddled against the least damaged wall, lasgun across my knees. Sleep seemed impossible, but exhaustion eventually pulled me under into fitful dreams filled with chitinous limbs and the screams of dying men. I jolted awake at the sound of the vox caster's sudden increase in activity. The static had given way to something else, a voice struggling to break through the interference. I scrambled to the unit, adjusting the frequency modulator to strengthen the signal. Survivors at Sector 7-9, Imperial Forces, secure position. The voice faded in and out, but there was no mistaking it. Sergeant Krell, the gruff, distinctive cadence of his speech pattern was unmistakable even through the distortion. My blood ran cold. Sergeant Krell had died in the initial assault. I had watched a Tyranid warrior impale him on its bone sword, lifting his thrashing body into the air as his blood rained down on the trench floor. Yet here was his voice, speaking of survivors and a secure position. The transmission continued, breaking through the static in fragments. Coordinates followed, a location deeper in the trench network, away from the extraction point designated in the Commissar's orders. The vox fell silent again, leaving me alone with the implications of what I'd heard. The most logical explanation was that I had misidentified the voice, that it belonged to another survivor who simply sounded similar to Krell. The alternative was too unsettling to contemplate. I checked the Commissar's data slate again, reviewing the extraction coordinates. They pointed to landing zone Epsilon, approximately 4 kilometers northeast of my position. The coordinates from the vox transmission, however, led southwest, deeper into the labyrinthine trench system that had been overrun during the assault. The rational choice was clear: head northeast toward the extraction point and hope the Astartes arrived as promised. Yet something about the transmission nagged at me. If there were indeed survivors, abandoning them to their fate would be unconscionable. The Cadian 88th left no man behind. It was a point of regimental pride that had been drilled into us since our first day of training. I studied the crude map etched into the wall of the command bunker. The Kalinar trench system stretched for kilometers in every direction, a maze of interconnected fighting positions, bunkers, and artillery emplacements. Most of it would be compromised now, either collapsed from bombardment or infested with Tyranid organisms. The acid damage to the bunker walls troubled me. It suggested that the Xenos had breached this position at some point, yet there were no bodies besides the Commissars, no signs of the brutal close quarters fighting that had characterized the assault. Where had everyone gone, and why had the Tyranids not finished their work here? Outside the relative safety of the bunker, the trenches would be a nightmare to navigate. The fighting had been brutal, with thousands of guardsmen falling to the Xenos' swarm. The bodies would still be there, alongside whatever predatory organisms the hive mind had left behind to secure its conquest. I checked and rechecked my equipment, tightening straps and securing loose items that might create noise. The bolt pistol went into my empty holster, the lasgun slung across my back. The crack grenade I attached to my webbing where it could be quickly accessed. The combat knife I kept in hand, in the confined space of the trenches, it might prove more useful than the lasgun if I encountered anything. The secondary access tunnel led to a maintenance shaft that eventually opened onto one of the main trench arteries. I would need to move carefully, staying alert for any sign of movement. Tyranids were notorious for leaving behind smaller organisms, rippers and other scavenger strains, to process biomass after the main assault had moved on. Before leaving the relative safety of the bunker, I made one final attempt to raise anyone on the vox. There was no response except for a brief burst of static that might have contained words too garbled to make out. I shut down the unit to conserve its power cell, disconnecting the main receiver but keeping the portable transmitter component. If I heard another transmission, I wanted to be able to respond. The acid damage on the walls grew more pronounced near the access tunnel, with entire sections of ferrocrete dissolved into bubbling, malformed shapes. The smell grew stronger too, that distinctive blend of chemical burn and rotting meat that characterized Tyranid corruption. As I prepared to venture into the tunnel, my chronometer beeped softly. 2200 hours, night had fully fallen on the surface. In the trenches, it would be pitch black, with only my lasgun's power pack indicator providing any illumination unless I risked using the tactical light. The darkness would hide me from visual detection, but the Tyranids hunted by scent and motion as much as sight. The last transmission from Sergeant Krell's voice continued to trouble me as I stared into the darkness of the tunnel. I knew with absolute certainty that he was dead, yet his voice had come through clearly enough to recognize, speaking of survivors and safety in a place that logic told me could offer neither. I took a deep breath of the stale bunker air, knowing it might be the last relatively clean oxygen I would taste for some time. Ahead lay the corpse-choked trenches of Kalinar, behind me a slowly dissolving bunker that would eventually become my tomb if I remained. Neither option promised survival, but only one offered the possibility of answers. With lasgun raised and senses straining against the darkness, I stepped into the tunnel, leaving behind the false security of the command bunker. The weight of the Commissar's final orders and the mysterious transmission from a dead man pushed me forward into the unknown depths of Kalinar Trench. The tunnel stretched before me like the gullet of some massive beast, descending at a shallow angle into absolute darkness. My boots made wet, sucking sounds against the ferrocrete floor. Something had pooled here, water, blood, or worse, and I tried not to think about which was most likely as I activated my lasgun's tactical light. The narrow beam cut through the blackness, revealing walls coated with a slick greenish film that glistened unnaturally. The air grew heavier as I progressed, laden with the unmistakable copper sweet stench of human blood mixed with the acidic tang of Xeno's ichor. Breathing through my mouth helped, but I could almost taste the death in the air, coating my tongue with each labored breath. The tunnel eventually opened into what had once been a forward supply depot. Now it was a charnel house. The light from my lasgun played across a scene of absolute carnage. Bodies of guardsmen lay strewn about, many torn apart with surgical precision. Limbs separated from torsos, ribcage splayed open, skulls split like overripe fruit. The Tyranids hadn't simply killed these men, they'd butchered them methodically, harvesting genetic material and biomass. I recognized several faces among the dead. Corporal Hask, who'd shared his last low stick with me 2 days before the assault. Private Jennar, who kept a pict of his infant daughter inside his helmet. All men I'd fought alongside, eaten with, complained with about officers and rations. Some of the corpses showed signs that turned my stomach more than the dismemberment. Pale, waxy growths protruded from open wounds. On one body I couldn't identify who it had been. The chest cavity housed a nest of glistening, maggot-like organisms that squirmed when my light fell upon them. Gene-stealer infection. The first stage of Tyranid infiltration, corrupting human genetic material to create hybrids that would serve as advanced scouts for the Hive Fleet. I crushed the writhing mass with the butt of my lasgun, the creatures popping with wet, satisfying crunches. A small act of defiance against the Xenos that had taken everything from me. The Vox unit at my hip crackled suddenly, making me flinch. I fumbled with the controls, reducing the volume to prevent the sound from traveling. Through the static came a voice, not Sergeant Krell this time, but Specialist Orden, our communications expert. Orden's message was fragmented but clear enough. Survivors had established a defensive position at Junction 23A with access to an ammunition cache. They needed additional manpower to hold out until extraction. The message ended with an urgent request for any able-bodied guardsmen to converge on their position. My grip tightened on the lasgun. Orden had been stationed beside me during the initial assault. I had watched a barbed strangler coil around his torso, crushing him until blood erupted from every orifice. There was no possibility he had survived, yet here was his voice, using proper authentication codes, though something about the cadence seemed off. The pauses between words were slightly too long, the inflection rising where it should have fallen. Small inconsistencies that wouldn't be noticeable to anyone who hadn't spent months listening to Orden's endless chatter about his homeworld's racing tournaments. I consulted the faded trench map painted on my forearm, a standard practice for infantrymen who couldn't rely on data slates surviving combat. Junction 23 lay deeper into the trench network, away from the extraction point, the same direction as Krell's coordinates. Moving through the supply depot, I noticed something that hadn't been immediately apparent. Along the walls and in corners, small chitinous growths had taken root in the ferrocrete. They resembled coral formations, but with an unsettling organic quality that marked them as Tyranid in origin. Some were the size of my fist, others barely visible except as discolorations on the surface. The hive mind was transforming the environment, preparing it for complete assimilation. I continued through the main trench, keeping my back to one wall at all times. The tactical light remained off except for brief moments when I needed to check my surroundings. The darkness was both ally and enemy, hiding me from sight but concealing potential threats until they were nearly upon me. The trench walls rose 3 meters on either side, once straight and uniform, now deformed by bombardment and biological corruption. In places, the walls bulged outward as though something grew within them. In others, they had partially collapsed, forcing me to climb over piles of debris. The chitinous growths became more prevalent the deeper I went, forming complex patterns that seemed almost deliberate, like circuit diagrams or neural networks. At a junction where 3 trenches converged, I discovered the remains of a last stand. A heavy bolter had been set up on a tripod, its barrel bent and useless. Shell casings littered the ground around it, indicating the gunner had expended significant ammunition before falling. The bodies told the story, 5 guardsmen positioned in a semicircle, their las guns still clutched in death-stiffened hands. They died facing outward, defending against an attack from multiple directions. Among them lay the unmistakable form of Sergeant Thade, his augmetic right arm torn completely from its socket. Thade, who had appeared in the latest Vox transmission, claiming to have secured medical supplies at the same junction where his corpse now lay. The Vox crackled again. This time, 3 voices overlapped: Krell, Orden, and now Lieutenant Vaskel, our platoon commander. Their messages contradicted each other on minor details, but conveyed the same essential information. Safety, supplies, and strength in numbers awaited at coordinates deeper in the trench system. Vaskel's voice particularly disturbed me. The lieutenant had been a stern, by-the-book officer who never deviated from proper military protocol. Yet his transmission contained none of the standard authentication procedures, no recognition codes, no proper sign-offs. Instead, he spoke with an almost casual disregard for procedure, something the real Vaskel would never have done, even in extremis. I continued forward, passing more scenes of slaughter. The Tyranids had been thorough in their work. Most bodies showed evidence of feeding, great chunks of flesh removed with precision. Others displayed the early stages of infestation, with small tendrils emerging from eyes, mouths, or open wounds. At a collapsed section of trench, I was forced to detour through what had been a medici station. The white interior was now splashed with red-brown stains. Medical equipment lay scattered and broken. Diagnostic machines blinked with intermittent power, their machine spirits slowly dying without tech priests to maintain them. A sound from deeper within the station froze me in place, a wet, rasping breath followed by the click of metal against metal. I raised my las gun, finger tensing on the trigger. In the far corner, slumped against an operating table, sat the broken form of tech priest Damal. The red robes of the Adeptus Mechanicus were now black with dried blood, and several of his mechanical appendages hung limp and useless. His augmetic right eye flickered weakly, the red glow pulsing in time with his labored breathing. The tech priest's condition was terminal. His organic components had suffered massive trauma, and his mechanical parts were failing without the proper rituals of maintenance. Yet his augmented brain still functioned, processing information even as his body shut down. Damal recognized me, his biological eye widening slightly. With tremendous effort, he raised a mechadendrite that still functioned. At its tip was a small device and auspex, but modified with additional components I didn't recognize. He pressed it into my hand, his intent clear even without words. The tech priest's breathing became more labored as he activated a data slate embedded in his chest. Text scrolled across the screen, explaining what his failing vocal synthesizer could not articulate. The Vox network had been compromised. Something was creating a synaptic echo within the communication infrastructure, using the recorded voices of dead soldiers to lure survivors into traps. With his remaining strength, Damal showed me how to operate the modified auspex. It was calibrated to detect unusual bioelectrical activity, specifically, the unique energy signatures of Tyranid synaptic organisms. When activated, the device immediately registered multiple contacts throughout the trench system, pulsing in patterns that corresponded with the timing of the Vox transmissions. Damal's biological eye closed for the final time as his systems failed one by one. The light in his augmetic eye dimmed and went out. His final gift had been knowledge and perhaps a chance at survival. I continued through the trench network, now guided by the AuSpex readings. The device vibrated softly whenever it detected synaptic activity, growing more intense as I approached a secondary command post that had survived relatively intact. Inside the command post, several cogitators still functioned, their screens casting blue-green light across the otherwise dark interior. The machine spirits within them had been resilient enough to maintain basic functions despite the lack of human operators. I accessed the surveillance system, cycling through picked feeds from cameras positioned throughout the trench network. Most showed only static or darkness where cameras had been destroyed, but one feed from a junction near my current position had captured footage from just hours earlier. The timestamp indicated it was recorded shortly after the main assault had been repelled. The grainy image showed a group of guardsmen, among them Krell, Orden, and Vaskel, being surrounded by Tyranid organisms. Not killed immediately, but subdued and dragged toward a tunnel that hadn't existed on any official map of the trench system. The Tyranids had burrowed new pathways beneath our defenses. The footage confirmed my growing suspicion. The Vox messages were indeed a lure, but more sophisticated than I had imagined. The Tyranids weren't simply mimicking voices, they were using the actual guardsmen somehow, perhaps keeping them alive in some horrific state to extract information or vocal patterns. The AuSpex in my hand vibrated more intensely, warning of increased synaptic activity nearby. Through the command post's viewport, I could see movement in the trench outside, not the random scuttling of scavenger organisms, but the deliberate, coordinated motion of hunter strains. They had detected me, or perhaps had been tracking me all along, allowing me to follow the Vox messages deeper into their territory. The trap was closing, but now I understood its nature. Knowledge was power, as the tech priests were fond of saying. I checked the bolt pistol's magazine again, 3 rounds, each one precious. The lasgun was fully charged, good for approximately 60 shots before the power pack would need replacing. One crack grenade, capable of bringing down a section of trench if placed correctly. Limited tools against the biological horror that awaited outside. The modified AuSpex showed multiple contacts converging on my position from different directions. The strongest signal came from the direction of the mysterious tunnel shown in the surveillance footage, likely a synaptic creature, one of the specialized organisms that channeled the hive mind's will to lesser strains. The command post had 2 exits, one leading back the way I had come, the other deeper into the trench system toward the coordinates repeatedly mentioned in the false Vox messages. Neither offered a clear path to the extraction point, but the backtracking route would at least take me away from the highest concentration of Tyranid organisms. The Vox unit crackled once more. This time, the voice belonged to Commissar Drave, the same man whose partial corpse I had found in the bunker. His message was different from the others, speaking not of supplies or defensive positions, but of a direct path to the extraction point. A shortcut through the tunnel network that would bypass Tyranid concentrations. The voice was perfect, the Commissar's distinctive aristocratic accent reproduced flawlessly, but the words betrayed the deception. Drave would never have suggested retreat or evasion. His solution to Tyranid infestation would have been direct confrontation, fighting to the last man as befitted the Cadian tradition. The AuSpex vibrated violently as something massive moved through the trench outside the command post. Through the viewport, I caught a glimpse of chitinous plates and specialized feeding appendages, a Tyranid organism adapted for tracking and capturing prey rather than outright killing. The hive mind wanted prisoners, not corpses. I extinguished all lights and pressed myself against the wall beside the viewport, controlling my breathing as the creature paused outside. Its elongated head swung from side to side, sensory organs sampling the air. It was hunting by scent, following the trail I had left through the trench system. The creature moved on after several heart-stopping moments, proceeding in the direction of the false coordinates. The AuSpex indicated it was moving to join other organisms at what I now recognized as an ambush point, the location where all the Vox messages had been directing me. With the immediate threat temporarily gone, I studied the command post's tactical display. The extraction point was marked clearly, approximately 3 kilometers northeast of my position. Between me and potential salvation lay a labyrinth of trenches, most likely infested with Tyranid organisms. The surveillance system offered limited visibility of key junctions, enough to plan a route that might avoid the heaviest concentrations of Xenos. The modified AuSpecs would warn me of synaptic activity, giving me a chance to hide or change course if necessary. As I plotted my path to extraction, the Vox unit fell silent. The sudden absence of transmission was more unsettling than the false messages had been. Either the Tyranids had abandoned their lure, or they were conserving their efforts for a more concentrated deception. The chitinous growths on the command post walls seemed to pulse slightly in the dim light, as though breathing in unison. The Tyranid corruption was spreading, transforming the human-made structure into something alien. Soon the entire trench system would become an extension of the hive mind's biological network. Time was running out. If the extraction came as promised, I had less than 24 hours to reach the landing zone. If no extraction came, if the Astartes had written off this position as lost, then my survival meant nothing except prolonging the inevitable. But I was Cadian. We did not yield, even when defeat was certain. The 88th Regiment might be destroyed, but as long as one guardsman drew breath, the fight continued. I would reach the extraction point or die trying, denying the Tyranids the satisfaction of adding my biomass to their collection. I checked my equipment one final time, tightening the straps on my flak armor and securing the AuSpecs to my belt where I could easily monitor its readings. The bolt pistol I kept in hand now, its limited ammunition reserved for whatever synaptic creature was coordinating this elaborate trap. Outside, distant shrieks echoed through the trench network, the sound of Tyranids communicating or perhaps engaging another survivor. The hive mind's attention was divided, creating an opportunity I couldn't afford to waste. I moved through the trench network with the modified AuSpecs clutched tightly in my hand, its gentle vibrations guiding me away from the densest concentrations of Tyranid organisms. The device had become my lifeline, a final gift from Tech Priest Damal that might be the difference between survival and becoming another source of biomass for the hive mind. The trenches grew increasingly unfamiliar as I progressed. What had once been uniform ferrocrete channels designed by Munitorum engineers now resembled organic tunnels. The walls glistened with a slick, mucus-like substance that seemed to pulse in the dim light of my lasgun's tactical illuminator. Chitinous growths protruded at irregular intervals, forming structures that resembled nerve clusters or synaptic nodes. The smell had changed too. Beyond the expected stench of death and decay lurked something else, a cloying, almost sweet odor that reminded me of rotting fruit. It clung to the back of my throat, making each breath an exercise in suppressing my gag reflex. According to my forearm map, I had covered approximately 1 kilometer since leaving the command post. The extraction point lay another 2 kilometers northeast, but the direct route was blocked by a collapsed section of trench. The AuSpecs indicated heavy Tyranid activity in the area surrounding the blockage. They were using the choke point as a hunting ground, concentrating their forces where survivors would be forced to detour. I paused at a junction to check my bearings. The walls here were particularly corrupted, with the ferrocrete almost entirely subsumed by organic matter. The floor squished beneath my boots, the sound making me wince with each step. What had once been solid ground was now a carpet of fleshy material that yielded slightly under pressure. The AuSpecs suddenly vibrated with increased intensity. Something was approaching, something with significant synaptic activity. I extinguished my light and pressed myself into a recess where the organic growth was thickest, hoping the similar biological signatures would mask my presence. What slithered past was unlike any Tyranid strain I had encountered during the initial assault. It resembled a massive serpent, but with dozens of undulating limbs that propelled it forward in a disturbing, fluid motion. Its elongated head housed multiple sensory organs that constantly twitched and rotated, sampling the environment for prey. Most alarming were the human-like appendages grafted onto its central body, arms and partial torsos that had been incorporated into its form, their flesh now the same color and texture as the creature's hide. The AuSpecs nearly vibrated out of my hand as the creature passed. This was no ordinary Tyranid organism. It was a specialized synapse creature, a direct conduit for the hive mind's will. Its presence here, deep in the trench network, suggested a level of strategic importance to this area that went beyond simple hunting. I waited until the creature had moved beyond the range of the AuSpecs before continuing, now following its path at a safe distance. The synapse creature might lead me to whatever was generating the false Vox transmissions, knowledge that could prove vital for any potential survivors or for the Ultramarines when they arrived. The creature led me to a section of trench that had completely collapsed, forming a crude chamber where the ceiling had given way. Here, the Tyranid corruption was most advanced. The entire space had been transformed into something resembling the interior of a living organism. Pulsating membranes stretched across openings. Tube-like structures carried unknown fluids through the walls. Clusters of sac-like growths hung from what had once been support beams. In the center of this biological nightmare lay something that made my blood run cold. A massive, bulbous structure dominated the chamber floor, partially buried in the corrupted earth. It resembled a bloated, grotesque parody of a human head, with multiple orifices that periodically opened and closed like gasping mouths. Tendrils extended from its base, connecting to the surrounding biological matter and disappearing into the trench walls. The Auspex's readings were off the charts, the device vibrating so violently I had to stuff it into my webbing to silence it. This was no ordinary Tyranid organism. It was a specialized node, a subcomponent of a Norn queen, the massive creature responsible for spawning Tyranid broods. This node appeared to have been specifically adapted for a purpose I could not immediately discern. Around the node, arranged in a rough circle, were the remains of several Vox caster units, standard Imperial Guard communication equipment that had been partially absorbed into the biological mass. Cables and wiring protruded from the devices, connecting them directly to the pulsating node. The realization struck me with horrific clarity. The node had integrated itself with our Vox network, creating a biological interface between the hive mind and Imperial communication systems. This explained the false transmissions. The creature was somehow accessing the Vox network, broadcasting signals using harvested memories from consumed guardsmen. As I studied the grotesque scene, my peripheral vision caught movement where there should have been none. For a split second, I thought I saw Corporal Hask standing at the edge of the chamber, watching me with blank eyes. When I turned to look directly, there was nothing there, just pulsating organic matter and shadows. The hallucination, if that's what it was, repeated itself moments later. This time it was Lieutenant Vaskel, his uniform pristine despite his documented death, standing rigidly at attention beside a growth-covered support beam. Again, when I focused directly on the spot, the apparition vanished. The psychological strain was beginning to take its toll. Sleep deprivation, constant fear, and the alien environment were combining to affect my perception. I needed to remain focused on the objective, reach the extraction point, survive to report what I had discovered. Yet the hallucinations persisted, becoming more elaborate. As I carefully backed away from the node chamber, intending to find an alternate route, I saw Sergeant Krell walking alongside me in the trench. His form flickered and distorted, momentarily revealing a chitinous exoskeleton beneath the familiar human exterior before resolving back into Krell's gruff countenance. Implications were disturbing. Either my mind was fracturing under the strain, or the synapse node was somehow projecting these images directly into my consciousness. Neither possibility was comforting. I consulted the Auspex again, seeking a path with minimal Tyranid activity. The readings were confusing. Bioelectrical signatures seemed to be everywhere now, making it difficult to distinguish safe routes from dangerous ones. The hive mind's presence had saturated this section of the trench network. A new concern gnawed at me as I retraced my steps toward the command bunker I had abandoned earlier. What if the bunker itself had been compromised? The Auspex confirmed my fears, showing multiple signatures surrounding the structure. The readout suggested dormant organisms, hormigaunts most likely, given their size and distribution pattern, positioned in a perfect ambush formation around the bunker's perimeter. The Tyranids had anticipated that survivors might return to the relative safety of hardened structures. They had prepared accordingly, seeding the approaches with dormant hunter strains that would activate when prey returned. Had I remained in the bunker, I would eventually have been surrounded by awakening predators with no avenue of escape. My route now took me through a section of trench that had seen particularly fierce fighting. Laz burns scarred the walls, and shell casings crunched underfoot. Bodies lay where they had fallen, some partially consumed, others untouched except for small entry wounds where Tyranid parasites had been implanted. The Vox unit at my hip suddenly crackled to life, startling me with its clarity and volume. This transmission was different from the previous ones, stronger, clearer, with none of the distortion that had characterized the false messages. The Imperial authentication codes scrolled across the small display screen, each one checking out against the cipher I had memorized during deployment. This was a genuine Imperial transmission, not a Tyranid deception. The message was brief but unambiguous. Ultramarine's second company under Captain Sicarius would establish a landing zone at the coordinates specified in our original extraction orders. Extraction would commence in 12 hours. Any surviving Imperial personnel were ordered to converge on the landing zone. 12 hours. The chronometer on my wrist indicated I had just under half a day to travel 3 kilometers through Tyranid-infested territory. Under normal circumstances, such a distance would be trivial, an hour's march at most, but the current conditions made every meter a potential death sentence. The AusPEC showed the most direct path to the landing zone led through a section of trenches now completely overtaken by Tyranid biomass. The readings suggested minimal active organisms. The hive mind had diverted most of its forces elsewhere, perhaps preparing for the Ultramarine's arrival, but the environment itself had become hostile. The organic corruption had advanced to the point where the trenches themselves might react to human presence. As I plotted my course, the hallucinations intensified. My dead squadmates now walked alongside me constantly, their forms shifting between human and Tyranid with disturbing fluidity. Specialist Ordon's face would suddenly split open to reveal glistening mandibles. Commissar Drave's greatcoat would momentarily transform into chitinous plates before reverting to standard Imperial issue. The node creature had discovered my presence. It had abandoned the subtle lure of false Vox transmissions for a more direct assault on my senses. My Vox unit erupted with a cacophony of overlapping voices, my squadmate's final moments captured with perfect fidelity. Screams of pain and terror mixed with desperate prayers to the Emperor and the dying curses of men who knew they were already dead. The psychological attack was devastatingly effective. My legs buckled as paralyzing fear washed over me. The voices in the Vox were so real, so immediate, that I could almost see the deaths happening before me. Interspersed with the screams came something else, subsonic pulses that seemed to bypass my ears entirely, resonating directly in my brainstem. These were not sounds, but pure hive mind impulses, designed to induce disorientation and compliance. I fumbled with the Vox unit's controls, trying to silence the psychological weapon, but my fingers refused to cooperate. The fear had become physiological, my body betraying me as fight or flight responses overwhelmed rational thought. Salvation came in an unexpected form. The body of a Tempestus Scion lay half buried in the trench wall, his carapace armor cracked but largely intact. The Scion's equipment pack remained sealed, protected from the environment by its armored casing. Inside, I found what might make the difference between survival and submission, a combat stim injector, still loaded with a full dose. The Tempestus Scions were known to use specialized combat drugs, more potent than the standard issue stims provided to regular guardsmen. These compounds not only enhanced physical performance but also stabilized neurochemical responses, allowing the elite soldiers to function in environments that would incapacitate normal humans. I pressed the injector against my neck and activated it. The effect was immediate and profound. Clarity returned as the drug flooded my system, suppressing the fear response and sharpening my senses. The hallucinations didn't disappear completely, but they receded to the periphery of my awareness, recognizable now as artificial constructs rather than reality. The Vox unit's assault on my psyche lost much of its power. I could still hear the dying screams of my comrades, but the emotional impact was blunted, allowing me to think tactically again. I switched off the device, cutting off the node creature's most direct avenue of attack. The stim had given me a window of opportunity, but it came with limitations. According to the dosage indicator, I had approximately 6 hours before the compound metabolized from my system. After that, the crash would leave me more vulnerable than before. I needed to reach the extraction point before the stim wore off. The AusPEC indicated increased activity around the node chamber I had discovered. The hive mind was marshaling its forces, perhaps preparing a more conventional assault now that its psychological tactics had been temporarily thwarted. I needed to move quickly while the stim was at peak effectiveness and before the Tyranids could organize a coordinated response. I plotted a course that would take me through the least corrupted sections of trench, avoiding the biomass-choked areas where movement would be slow and detection likely. The path was longer but offered better chances of remaining undetected. With the stim enhancing my physical capabilities, I could maintain a pace that might have been impossible otherwise. As I moved through the trench network, the true extent of the Tyranid corruption became apparent. What had begun as isolated growths had evolved into a comprehensive biological system. The trenches were becoming a circulatory network for the hive mind, carrying nutrients and information through the modified environment. In some sections, the walls pulsed visibly, like the chambers of a massive heart. The stim allowed me to observe these changes with scientific detachment, noting details that might prove valuable to the Ordo Xenos if I survived to report them. The Tyranids weren't simply consuming the environment, they were transforming it into something that could sustain their specialized organisms indefinitely. This wasn't a temporary invasion, it was permanent colonization. The combat stim coursing through my veins kept the hallucinations at bay as I moved deeper into the corrupted trench network. The Commissar's bolt pistol felt reassuringly solid in my hand. 3 rounds of Emperor-blessed vengeance, each one potentially worth a life if used with precision. The cracked grenade hung heavy on my belt, its weight a constant reminder of my final option should escape prove impossible. With the modified Auspex guiding my path, I formulated a desperate plan. The device had revealed something crucial about the Tyranid presence. The synaptic network controlling the lesser organisms had discernible weak points. The node creature I discovered wasn't just broadcasting false Vox signals. It was a critical junction in the local hive mind's control structure. Destroying it might create enough confusion among the Xenos to clear a path to the extraction point. The stim enhanced clarity allowed me to interpret the Auspex readings with unprecedented precision. The bioelectrical signatures formed patterns that reminded me of the tactical displays I'd seen in the command bunker. A network of control nodes with stronger signals representing more important synaptic creatures. One signature pulsed with particular intensity, approximately half a kilometer from my position, in the direction of what had once been the regimental basilica. The basilica had been converted into a forward operating base during the initial deployment, its thick rockcrete walls and defensible position making it ideal for command operations. If the Tyranids had established a primary synapse node there, it suggested they understood the strategic value of the location, a disturbing indication of tactical awareness beyond mere instinct. Moving toward the basilica required navigating a section of trench that had completely collapsed, forcing me to climb to the surface. The stim allowed me to push through the physical exertion, scaling the crumbling ferrocrete with enhanced strength and coordination. As I reached the top, the true extent of the planet's corruption spread before me. What had once been rolling plains of wheat analog crops was now a twisted landscape of alien vegetation. Sieve fleshy structures rose from the ground like malformed towers, connected by pulsating tendrils that resembled massive arteries. The sky itself seemed tainted, a sickly purple-green haze obscuring the stars. In the distance, massive bioships hung suspended in the upper atmosphere, their silhouettes reminiscent of predatory sea creatures from ancient Terra. I kept low, using the corrupted terrain for cover as I approached the basilica. The once proud imperial structure was barely recognizable. Its walls had been partially dissolved and reformed into a hybrid of architecture and organism. The stained glass windows depicting the Emperor's glory had been replaced with translucent, membrane-like structures that pulsed with internal light. The bell tower remained standing but was now encased in a chitinous shell, forming a spire that reached toward the corrupted sky. The Auspex vibrated with increasing intensity as I approached, confirming the presence of a major synaptic node within. More concerning were the readings indicating multiple Tyranid organisms patrolling the perimeter, not mindless gaunts, but warrior-strained creatures capable of independent thought and action even without direct synaptic control. I circled the basilica, seeking a point of entry that might avoid the patrols. The stim kept my movements precise and my mind focused, but I was acutely aware of its limited duration. According to my chronometer, I had approximately 4 hours of enhanced capability remaining before the inevitable crash. A partially collapsed section of the eastern wall offered the most promising approach. The rubble had formed a natural ramp leading to what had once been a supply entrance, now transformed into an orifice-like opening in the organic matter covering the structure. The auspex indicated minimal activity in this area. Perhaps the collapse was recent enough that the Tyranids hadn't fully incorporated it into their defensive network. As I made my approach, staying low and moving during the patrol's blind spots, I noticed something odd about the rubble. Mixed among the broken rockcrete and twisted metal were human remains in various states of preservation. This wasn't unusual in itself. The entire battlefield was littered with corpses, but these bodies showed signs of much older decomposition than could be accounted for by the recent invasion. Some of the remains wore civilian clothing rather than Imperial Guard uniforms, their desiccated forms suggesting they had died months or even years before the Tyranid assault. More disturbing were the subtle mutations visible on the better preserved corpses, extra digits, misaligned facial features, and in one case, a partial exoskeletal growth along a spinal column. The implications were chilling. This planet hadn't been infiltrated during the invasion. It had been compromised long before the Hive fleet arrived. Genestealer cultists had prepared the way, weakening defenses and sabotaging response capabilities from within. This explained the unusually coordinated nature of the initial assault, how the Tyranids had known exactly where to strike for maximum effect. I reached the collapsed section and began my ascent, careful to disturb as little of the rubble as possible. The organic matter covering the basilica reacted to proximity, subtle ripples spreading outward from wherever my body made contact. The stim allowed me to notice these details without succumbing to the revulsion they would normally trigger. The entrance orifice contracted slightly as I approached, sensing my presence. I hesitated, uncertain if it would close completely or trigger some kind of alarm. Instead, after a moment, it relaxed again, opening wider than before. The Tyranid organism had mistaken me for something belonging to the Hive. Perhaps the combat stim was masking my human biochemical signatures, or the residual corruption from prolonged exposure to the environment had altered my scent profile. I slipped through the opening into what had once been the basilica's main chamber. The interior was barely recognizable as a human structure. The vaulted ceiling had been transformed into a canopy of hanging, sack-like growths that dripped viscous fluid onto the floor below. The pews had been dissolved entirely, replaced with ridge-like formations that resembled the interior of a massive digestive tract. The auspex nearly vibrated out of my hand, its readings spiking dramatically. The synapse node was close, directly beneath the former altar, where a massive pit had been excavated through the floor into natural caverns below. The pit pulsed with bioluminescent light, casting sickly blue-green shadows across the corrupted chamber. My rebreather's indicator showed oxygen levels dropping rapidly. The air inside the basilica was being actively processed by the organism, converted into something suitable for Tyranid physiology but increasingly toxic to humans. The filter would provide protection for perhaps another hour before failing completely. The stim was beginning to fade as well, its effects diminishing as my body metabolized the compound. The hallucinations that had been kept at bay started to return, flickering at the edges of my vision. My dead squadmates walked beside me again, their forms shifting between human and Xenos with nauseating fluidity. I approached the pit cautiously, the auspex guiding me toward the synapse node. The opening was approximately 3 meters across, descending at a steep angle into darkness. The walls were lined with the same fleshy material that covered everything else, but here it pulsed with greater intensity, almost like a heartbeat. Climbing down required pressing my body against the living tissue of the pit walls. Each point of contact sent ripples through the organism, but it didn't react defensively. The stim's masking effect continued to protect me, though I could feel it weakening with each passing minute. The pit descended approximately 20 meters before opening into a larger chamber, a natural cave that had been completely transformed by Tyranid corruption. The space was dominated by a massive, pulsating structure that resembled a cross between a brain and a heart, its surface covered with undulating tendrils that connected to the surrounding walls. Surrounding this central mass were dozens of smaller sacks, each containing a partially digested human form. With horror, I recognized members of my squad, not dead as I had believed, but kept in a state of suspended animation, their bodies partially dissolved and incorporated into the Tyranid biomass. The node creature had preserved their brains and vocal cords intact, connected to biomechanical interfaces that allowed the organism to access their memories and mimic their voices. This explained the Vox transmissions. They weren't recordings or imitations, but the actual voices of my squad mates, forced to lure their comrades into traps against their will. Sergeant Krell's face was still recognizable, though his body below the neck had been almost completely absorbed. His eyes moved, tracking my approach, awareness and agony evident in his gaze. Similar fates had befallen Lieutenant Vaskel, Specialist Orden, and at least 15 other members of the 88th. They had become living components in the Tyranid communication network, their humanity reduced to a resource for the hive mind to exploit. My rebreather alarm beeped softly, warning of critical oxygen levels. The stim had faded enough that the full horror of what I was seeing began to penetrate my chemical detachment. These men, my brothers in arms, were suffering a fate worse than death, their bodies and minds violated by the alien intelligence for its own purposes. The synapse node pulsed more rapidly as I approached, perhaps sensing my presence or responding to the distress of its human components. The AuSpex readings indicated this was indeed the primary control node for the local Tyranid network. Destroying it would disrupt the synaptic control of organisms throughout the trench system, potentially creating enough confusion to allow me to reach the extraction point. But more importantly, it would end the suffering of my squad mates. The Emperor's Mercy delivered by fire and explosives. I removed the cracked grenade from my belt, studying the central mass to identify the most vulnerable point. The modified AuSpex revealed a cluster of bioelectrical activity near the center of the structure, the equivalent of a nervous system nexus. A direct hit there would cause catastrophic failure throughout the organism. As I moved closer to place the grenade, Krell's eyes followed me with increasing urgency. His partially preserved vocal cords vibrated, producing a sound too distorted to be words but conveying unmistakable meaning nonetheless. Warning, danger. The floor beneath me shifted suddenly, the organic material parting to reveal a concealed chamber below. From this pit rose a massive form, a gene-stealer patriarch, its purple carapace bearing the scars of countless battles. This was no ordinary Tyranid organism, but the progenitor of the cult that had infiltrated the planet years before the invasion. The creature's forearms ended in razor-sharp talons, and its face was a nightmare of mandibles and teeth. Most disturbing were its eyes, not the mindless orbs of lesser Tyranid strains, but calculating, intelligent organs that assessed me with cold alien purpose. The Patriarch had been waiting, using the synapse node as bait to draw out any surviving Imperial forces. It moved with shocking speed for its size, closing the distance between us in a single bound. Only the lingering effects of the stim allowed me to react in time, diving sideways as talons slashed through the space I had occupied a moment before. The bolt pistol came up automatically, muscle memory from countless drills guiding my aim. I squeezed the trigger 3 times in rapid succession, each round finding its mark in the creature's torso. The mass reactive shells detonated inside the Patriarch's body, blowing massive chunks from its carapace and spraying ichor across the chamber, but the creature didn't fall. The wounds, grievous as they were, began to close almost immediately as accelerated healing mechanisms activated. Patriarch screeched, the sound bypassing my ears to resonate directly in my brain, momentarily paralyzing me with its psychic force. My stim reserves were nearly depleted, the chemical enhancement fading rapidly from my system. The rebreather gave a final warning beep before falling silent, indicating complete filter failure. I had minutes at most before the toxic atmosphere would overcome me. The Patriarch advanced more cautiously now, wary of the bolt pistol despite its healing capabilities. It circled, seeking an opening, its psychic presence hammering against my consciousness with increasing force. The hallucinations intensified, reality blurring as the creature attempted to confuse and disorient me. In that moment of clarity that sometimes comes when all options are exhausted, I saw my path forward, not escape that had likely never been possible, but purpose. The Emperor demands sacrifice, and I would give mine meaning. I activated the cracked grenade, its arming sequence beeping softly as the countdown began, 10 seconds. The standard-issue explosive was designed to penetrate armored vehicles, its shape charge capable of blasting through ferrocrete bunkers. Against the unarmored tissue of the Synapse node, it would be devastating. The litany of sacrifice rose to my lips as I lunged forward, ducking under the Patriarch's slashing talons. Blood streamed from a gash across my shoulder, but the pain was distant, irrelevant to my purpose. 5 seconds remained on the grenade's timer as I drove it deep into the central mass of the Synapse node, directly into the nexus of bioelectrical activity. The Patriarch shrieked in rage, realizing my intent too late. It lunged forward, talons extended for a killing blow. 3 seconds. The creature's weight slammed into me, driving me back against the chamber wall. 1 second. I looked into the eyes of my squad mates, still conscious within their fleshy prisons, and saw understanding, perhaps even gratitude. The detonation was contained within the chamber, but its effects rippled outward through the entire synaptic network. The central node disintegrated in a spray of tissue and fluid, severing the connections to the human components and obliterating the control mechanism for the local Tyranid organisms. The Patriarch was caught in the blast, its body shielding me from the worst of the explosion, but not enough to prevent grievous injuries. I felt ribs crack, organs rupture, but somehow maintained consciousness as the chamber collapsed around us. Through the haze of pain and failing oxygen, I became aware of a new sound, the distinctive roar of Thunderhawk engines descending from orbit. The Ultramarines had arrived as promised, establishing their landing zone at the extraction coordinates. The destruction of the Synapse node had created the predicted effect. Tyranid organisms throughout the area were thrown into disarray, their coordinated defense collapsing without the hive mind's direct control. I dragged myself from the ruins of the basilica, every movement and exercise in agony. The stim was completely metabolized now, leaving me with only determination and duty to fuel my final journey. The extraction point was visible in the distance, marked by the blue-white landing lights of Thunderhawk gunships. Tyranid organisms scattered before me, no longer hunting with purpose but fleeing in confusion or attacking randomly without coordination. The path to extraction had opened, just as I had hoped when formulating my desperate plan. My chronometer indicated I had been unconscious longer than I realized. Only 20 minutes remained before the scheduled departure of the final extraction craft. 20 minutes to cover nearly a kilometer of corrupted terrain with failing strength and grievous injuries. One step at a time, I pushed forward. Blood loss and oxygen deprivation clouded my vision, turning the world into a tunnel with the extraction point's lights at its end. I could no longer feel my extremities, and each breath brought the copper taste of internal bleeding. The voices returned as I stumbled forward, not the false vox transmissions from the Synapse node, but hallucinations born of my failing body. My squadmates walked beside me again, but now they appeared as they had in life, uncorrupted by Tyranid influence. Whether these were psychic echoes, stim withdrawal, or the Emperor's mercy to a dying soldier, I couldn't say. The final 100 meters seemed impossibly vast. My legs gave out repeatedly, forcing me to crawl through the corrupted soil. The massive silhouettes of Space Marines in ultramarine blue power armor secured the perimeter, bolters sweeping the landscape for threats. Their voices carried across the distance, deep and resonant through their helmet voxes. I could not tell if they were real or another deception. The line between reality and hallucination had blurred beyond recognition. Perhaps this entire scenario was a final Tyranid trick, a false hope designed to extract information from my dying mind. The last meters disappeared beneath me as consciousness began to fade. The ground rushed up to meet my face as my strength finally failed completely. Through dimming vision, I saw ceramite armored boots approaching, massive gauntlets reaching down. Whether salvation or deception, the Emperor alone would judge. I had done my duty. The 88th Cadian had not fallen without exacting a price. As darkness claimed me, I thought of my squad mates, finally released from their living hell by the Emperor's mercy delivered through my hand. If this was death, I would face it as I had faced the enemy, without fear, secure in the knowledge that I had served to my last breath. The Emperor protects.